today, Adrian Childs on being diagnosed with attention deficit disorder as an adult. The broadcaster Adrian Childs remembers the first time that someone mentioned attention deficit disorder to him.
4 years ago, it was suggested to me by a psychologist I was seeing that I should be tested for ADD. So he sent me to an associate of his who was a consultant psychiatrist. And he had a look at me and said, yeah, I think you might have, you might not, don't know. But the medication might conflict with your blood pressure medication. So come back and see me. And then I got a bill the following day for a four-figure sum. So I thought, hang on, I haven't got it. It's just nonsense. It's just making money for the psychiatrist here. But then 3 years down the line, having forgotten all about it, I then was getting some cognitive behavioural therapy. And the woman I was seeing, who was an ex-GP, she said, oh, have you ever been tested for ADD?
When Adrian told her what had happened a few years earlier, she asked if he had seen the notes from that session. But he hadn't. So he went back and got hold of them.
And in there was this six-page letter from the psychiatrist to me at the time, which set it all out brilliantly. I then took the advice 3 years on to read this book. And as soon as I opened that book and I looked at all the symptoms, just every bit in it just seemed to make sense. High mental and physical energy coupled with extreme lassitude at times. Fast-moving, easily distracted mind, coupled with an amazingly super-focused mind at times. Unpredictability and impulsivity, disorganisation, yet tendency towards procrastination.
When Adrian mentioned this possible diagnosis to loved ones, they were initially pretty dismissive. But when he showed them a couple of pages of the book listing the 20 key symptoms, they said, yeah, that's you. Get it sorted.
Everyone's got a bit of these things, but every time I read this list, my heart sort of misses a beat, really. I think, yep, that's me.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, Adrian Childs on being diagnosed with ADD in his 50s. Adrian, how did it feel when this all fit into place?
You feel a number of things. You sort of relief and the bits of your life start making more sense when you go back. I mean, the danger of a lot of these things, it can give you a sort of a free pass, if you like. So anything you've done sort of bad in your life previously or any mistakes you make, you've still got to own them. But, I mean, there were just little tiny things in the past. You know, I read about this in the book and I just thought, oh, God, that's it. There was one really bizarre one, which has just come to mind now, speaking to you. The guy who wrote this original book called Delivered from Distraction, the one I was reading, he said he just suddenly, when he was talking to people and getting on really well and no problem or anything, say it was over a glass of wine, he suddenly had this urge, which was almost unstoppable, to just throw some wine in their face just to see what happened. Which sounds so specific and so random, but I had exactly that. I remember when I first joined ITV, and one of their analysts, just Andy Townsend, a really nice guy, used to be captain of Ireland. And I remember sitting, talking to him. I was sitting there with the restaurant, and I suddenly had this urge to just pick up the wine and just throw it at him, just to see what happened. And I thought, hang on, where's this come from? He's a lovely guy. I just dismissed it as some kind of nonsense. But then when I read exactly the description of that in the book, then I thought, oh, I only get this feeling very occasionally now. But I remember I was having to literally sit on my hands.
Have you? I mean, it's basically impulsivity there, isn't it? Have you ever actually acted on it in that way?
Well, no, I've never done anything like that. But, you know, impulsivity is, again, I suppose it's things like a lot of people do. You know, you suddenly find yourself buying something on Amazon, something you didn't know you needed, you didn't think you needed, and you have to have it then, at that moment. You're out for a walk, order this thing on Amazon. Or suddenly it'll come into my mind to cook something. Right, I've got to cook that. I've just absolutely got to cook that now for tonight. If I haven't got the ingredients, I'll go out and get them. And if they haven't got them in my local shop, I will go across London to the spice shop where I know they've got it, and I'll go and get it now, at this moment. I've just got to have it.
This has obviously made you reevaluate things. So let's wind right back in time and tell me what you were like as a child.
You know, well, as a kid, I wasn't exactly sort of high achieving, but, you know, I went to a decent state school just near Birmingham, and, you know, I got 7 or 8 O-levels, as they then were, and then took 4 A-levels, failed one of them, but with the 3 I did pass, I got into university. But, you know, I always remember my parents saying, oh, you're daydreaming, you know, will you concentrate? Always, and in class, forever, I was told, like, will you concentrate? Will you just focus on this? A memory, a really strong memory came back to me when I was up in the Midlands. It was just after the diagnosis, and I was in a supermarket, and a woman came up to me, and she was the mom of a lad I was at school with called Matthew. And as I was talking to her, a memory came back to me of him hitting me on the side of a head with a book. What happens was we were sitting talking, 3 of us, and then this Matthew was saying something to me, and I was just sort of oblivious, and then suddenly remembered, will you listen to me, Eggy? They used to call me Eggy at school, and just threw this book at me. It didn't hurt, you know, but, you know, I thought, all right, sorry. I must have driven people mad. I know I've driven my daughters mad. You know, people around me have always been, you know, you just disappeared, just lost you, you know, where have you gone?
Do you remember ever, when you were a child, anyone discussing the possibility of a diagnosis?
No, absolutely not.
What did they put it down to? Just your personality?
Yeah, just being a normal child or a normal teenager. You know, and I've heard it said of the growth of diagnosis of ADD, ADHD. I mean, one psychologist told me, he said, well, they're just mistaking signs of development. They're trying to medicalise that and medicate that. And I still don't know whether that's not the truth or not. I'm sort of somewhat mixed up about it.
So let's just focus on adulthood for a bit. You obviously left school with 3 good A-levels and your O-levels behind you. How did you end up with this career? Tell me what you did afterwards.
Well, I went and often did a mediocre degree in English literature in London. I never quite got to grips with what I was supposed to be doing. And, of course, the volume of reading you've got to do, you know, is really difficult. Maybe I could excuse the fact that I couldn't read 10 Charles Dickens novels in a week. You know, that one of the reasons might be that I had some kind of undiagnosed ADD. I just don't know. But then I ended up going on a journalism course, and then, you know, eventually came across somebody daft enough to give me something to present. That led to Match of the Day, and then ended up doing the Once Show and other bits and pieces, and just sort of managed to keep the career going. And I do often wonder sort of how, because I can be absolutely miles away when I'm on air doing a live interview. I mean, I just don't know how I've got away with it.
When you're on air, you feel like that?
Yeah.
Can you think of examples?
Oh, God, millions. You know, I'm just getting distracted by something. Something can pop up on the screen in front of me, you know, some football news, and I click on that. And then meanwhile, I'm doing an interview about a Lebanese politics or something. But then meanwhile, I'm looking at, you know, somebody who West Brom might be signing, and I'm just miles away. But, I mean, I became sort of a very competent sort of broadcaster. You know, I could ad-lib for hours on television or radio and sort of just get through it. But then, you know, by the end of ITV, when I went to ITV Sport, I sort of lost my mojo completely. And the more panicked I got, the less I was able to concentrate on anything. But then I started to overthink everything, over-concentrate on everything. I remember doing a match at Wembley. England were playing Ukraine or something. And there was just one page on autocue for me to read. And I just, every word just seemed to be like an absolute mountain to climb. So in a way, it was when I really, really had to focus because I was under pressure. Then I struggled. But if I didn't have time to think, I could just let myself get on with it. I'd be all right if that, you know, if that makes any sense at all. Like, for example, if you told me tonight, you're on BBC One now, for 3 hours you've got to ad-lib, I'd do it somehow. But if you told me, BBC One tonight, at 10 o'clock, you will read your own phone number out. I'd cock it up.
It seems that you did sense something was wrong at the time because you saw psychologists before you knew about this diagnosis. And I'm just wondering, why was that? What were you trying to get support with?
I mean, just feeling miserable, really. Just, I mean, the more successful I got, the more miserable I felt. I can't really put my finger on it. I don't mean just call it a midlife crisis or whatever. Just felt anxious and miserable. So, you know, I only wasn't particularly heavy, you know, but I still really felt I needed to talk to somebody. And, you know, overwhelmingly, I had this sense of an absolutely astounding amount of adrenaline. I just often feel, often used to fantasise in the past, if someone could put a tap like you might have one of those old wine boxes, just put it in the middle of my chest and just drain off the excess adrenaline, you know, and give it to somebody else who needed it. Be like an adrenaline donor, you know, just constantly just, you know, and it wasn't entirely unpleasant. It was half exciting and half terrifying, you know, or it'd wear off, then it'd come back. And then, you know, that just sort of wore me out. And that is, as I understand ADD, is partially explained by it constantly on this sort of roller coaster.
You've written in the past about drinking, and obviously self-medicating with alcohol and drugs is something that people with ADD do to deal with their condition.
Yeah.
In hindsight, do you think that might have been what you were doing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I wasn't doing it in a kind of a lose yourself, get smashed kind of way. I don't know whether it was the alcohol or just that moment of calm. The beer was sort of an excuse to just sort of sit still for a while. But actually, I have managed to, you know, I've cut down from whatever, you know, easily more than 50 units a week. You know, I've cut down to sort of basically about a third of that.
You know, as you said, a lot of people can probably relate to some of the symptoms you're talking about. You know, I just think about myself, and I don't think I would have it. I'm forgetful, I get distracted, I procrastinate, I impulsively buy things. What was it with you that you think took it to another level where it was very clear that there was something more specific?
I think it wasn't so much to do with the symptoms. It was to do with just generally how I felt. You know, I got to the point where there were days when I was struggling to function at all. You know, days when I'd run around and yet achieve nothing. Other days when I just got overwhelmed and sort of hamstrung. It was just getting worse and worse. So then it was the case of hearing from the psychiatrist that ADD would explain that. But you know, what feels to me, not fraudulent exactly, but just completely wrong with this, is that there is no doubt in my mind that if I hadn't been able to afford to pay for, you know, therapy, CBT, psychologists, psychs, whatever, you know, then I wouldn't be being treated now. I certainly wouldn't have the medication, I don't think. You know, this is absolutely a middle-class luxury. I don't think somebody with, you know, my symptoms going to a GP would end up getting to see a psychiatrist and getting this diagnosis.
Listening to you, one thing that just keeps coming through and that I find quite interesting is that you almost feel like a bit of an imposter with this ADD.
Yeah.
It's like you kind of, oh, you're middle class, I've got money, that's why I've, you know, that's how I've got there, and maybe I was just fine as a kid and they didn't need to diagnose it. And I suppose you've yet reached a point where medication and CBT has really helped you. So why do you doubt whether you're doing the right thing?
I don't know. I suppose there's a bit of sort of middle-class guilt, Catholic self-loathing. I just don't know. I just feel like it's too good to be true. I don't know. I feel like there's others need it more than me, and why should I? I mean, you know, nothing.
It's not an either, you know, or, though, is it?
No, it's not. Also, my mum's was and remains absolutely fanatically anti-medication. You know, I wouldn't get any kind of pill unless it was death's door at a kid. So I think that has rubbed off on me a bit.
Is that why you describe taking medication as cheating?
Yes. Sometimes I feel like that. And I've been, you know, slapped down by, you know, the CBT therapist and also the psychiatrist who said it's just complete nonsense. You know, you're just sort of giving yourself a chance.
And if that is the case, then tell me what a difference it's made to your life and how worried you are about the people who are not getting that type of support.
Well, I'm worried. There's so many campaigns, you know, often fronted by the royals. It's important to talk. There must be no stigma. But, you know, there's no point telling everyone to talk if we don't give people anyone to talk to. But if you've got this and you've got it worse than me, and, you know, you haven't got it in such a way where you can still find remunerative work and you haven't been able to build a life around you, you're never going to get anywhere without treatment. You'll just rush around chasing your tail, driving yourself and everybody else mad. That would be what I'd surmise.
Coming up, how ADHD is not a behavioural disorder, but a biological one. Professor Susan Young, you're a psychologist who specialises in ADHD. So you've treated a lot of people, young and old, with this condition. When adults are referred to you, what type of symptoms do you tend to see?
They describe that they have difficulty paying attention, with listening, with finishing things. They start lots of things, they never finish it. They're multitasking often to such an extent that they can't see the wood for the trees and they get overwhelmed and they often have a very chaotic lifestyle. They describe having a sort of ceaseless mental energy, which means for many of them they struggle to get to sleep at night. The hyperactive impulsive symptoms are more sort of acting without thinking, doing the first thing that springs to mind, speaking out of turn. With adults, we often consider almost like this emotional dysregulation, which they find exhausting. I often see ADHD as very much a disorder of extremes.
Adrian, who we've spoken to, was diagnosed with ADD. And I'm just wondering, what's the difference between that and ADHD?
Really, it's all ADHD, and you're either predominantly inattentive type or predominantly hyperactive impulsive type or combined. So you don't find people using ADD on its own so much these days. But what it means is you're predominantly inattentive type. The hyperactivity is much clearer in children. You know, I remember a child and his mother, and this child was rolling around all over the floor, sticking his fingers in the plug socket, and it was just impossible to do any kind of assessment. And of course, you don't get an adult doing that. But an adult will have much more this feeling of restlessness. And you often see them sort of, you know, the leg shaking or hands tapping, or they fiddle, they fidget, and they, you know, doodle, things like that.
Sounds exhausting.
Well, it is exhausting. It's exhausting for the person with ADHD, and it's also exhausting for the people who are around them.
And how does it tend to affect their lives, their work, their relationships?
There are positives about ADHD, and I often think that we don't focus on those enough. Those who can succeed have learned to do that because they've found a way to adapt the environment around them so it's an optimal environment. Show business and actually some sporting activities. There are people who are directors of large organisations who have personal assistants to do all the humdrum work, all the things that they're not so good at. You know, you hear, oh, there's Michael Phelps and there's Will I Am has got ADHD. And well, what I'd say is that's fine. And they've made it. They've done very well for themselves. Like Adrian Charles has done very well for himself. And I think the thing is because people with ADHD, they're so creative. They're so innovative, and that's the real positive thing. And it's about channeling those energies, and that's where people do really well. But not everyone can be Will I Am and Adrian Charles. For every person who's done that and found their way through in this environment, there's so many others, I can't tell you, who just can't find their way through. They're struggling at work. They often have a high turnover of occupations. Many of them will start to abuse substances, self-medicating perhaps with alcohol, cannabis, or other illicit drugs. There's a lot of comorbid, so coexisting mental health problems with ADHD. People with ADHD are very likely to develop anxiety, depression. So they often have a very poor outcome. Youngsters as well, they're looking for a social network. They get involved with the wrong people and they end up in prison.
Can it develop in adults, or is it the case that the person has always had ADHD since they were a child, but it went undiagnosed?
There have been discussions about this, and the research that has been done suggests that when they've looked at this adult onset ADHD, that really it has been present before, but it has pretty much gone undiagnosed. There's not very many that are true, valid adult onset ADHD presentations.
Do we know what causes it?
It's known that there are biological causes at the root of ADHD. It's pretty much an interplay of genetic and environmental factors. And there are specific genes that have been identified to be influential. And the environmental factors are things like birth trauma. And they have different brains. The ADHD brain has lower levels of some chemicals that are called neurotransmitters, and that these sort of help send messages throughout the body. And when you put somebody into an MRI, and a functional MRI, and they put electrodes all over their head and give them a task to do, and you compare the brain to somebody who hasn't got ADHD, you'll see that the person who has ADHD, parts of their brain just don't light up the way the brain of a person without ADHD. It's quite substantially different.
That's amazing. Can I ask you one thing that I never quite understood? ADHD medications tend to be stimulants such as amphetamines, which obviously work but seem like the wrong thing to give to an already hyperactive or distracted person. How do they work?
Well, as I said, you've got these neurotransmitters in the brain don't work so well. They're slower. They're not really working so well. So what the stimulant medication does is it stimulates them to work functionally.
Can I just ask you about a critique, I guess, of the way in which we treat people that you sometimes get? And in fact, we sort of got it a bit from Adrian, which is this almost denial within him that, you know, maybe all the diagnosis is doing is pathologizing normal behavior, and especially in children, and a kind of sense that maybe he himself is being over-medicated. Is there a worry that sometimes we're over-medicating this?
I think in the UK, we take a very cautious approach. I don't think that we are over-medicating, but there are different patterns in different countries, and it could be a different story in the USA, for example. But all this comes back down to the erroneous belief that ADHD is a behavioural disorder and puts the onus of blame on parents. And that is so unfair, because it very clearly has a biological root cause.
I suppose rather than blaming anybody for something that has a biological root cause, the question would be, is there a way to respond either through parenting or on a personal level, if you're an adult who's diagnosed with ADHD, that can help you to cope with it? How do you treat people?
The thing with the medication is that some people respond very well to it and some people less well, and some people not, they don't like it. In fact, I often hear young people say it dampens down their personality a bit. And there's often a belief that, right, I've got the medication, everything's going to change. And it doesn't. It might improve your concentration and might mean you're a bit less impulsive. But I always say pills don't build skills. It's not going to change years of practiced responding. Do you know, with adults, what I find, it's very difficult to work with them if they've only just been diagnosed. And the reason for that is that they're almost like in free fall of trying to make sense of it all. So suddenly they've discovered that all their life they've had difficulties and it's because of ADHD. It's not because they're stupid. So they go through a sort of emotional process. First of all, they're sort of relieved. Oh, got ADHD. I'll get some medication now. Let's see how this goes and maybe everything's going to be fine. But then they go through a period of anxiety. So, well, what does this mean? And then they often go through a phase of anger. They feel annoyed or angry that this has been missed. Because the one thing every adult with ADHD has got in common is that they've told their story. They've sat in front of someone somewhere, educationalist or healthcare practitioner, and told them of their problems over and over again. And it takes quite a long time until they get to what I call a phase of acceptance. I find you have to work with them to look back at their life and sort of cognitively reframe it, to reframe themselves as a person with ADHD.
Adrian, what's it been like for you looking back over your life with the knowledge now of this diagnosis?
I don't know. I think I've gained more on the swings than I've lost on the roundabouts. But I think there are others who would never have got on at school. I don't know. In a way, it's sort of pointless thinking, isn't it? You might as well just, you know, be grateful for the diagnosis, whatever treatment you can manage to get. I mean, the trouble is we're getting diagnosed at the age of 53 is, you know, you've got a lot of bad habits to unlearn in terms of getting organising, you know, doing things calmly and methodically. I also think the world we live in is just the greatest vector for ADD. You know, it is just absolutely ideal breeding ground to make it worse and worse and worse. You know, when on every smartphone, you've got basically the sum of all human knowledge of the possibilities for distraction are just so great that that feeds into ADD and just makes it that much worse. I mean, the happiest time for me personally was during hard lockdown. It just took the options away yeah. of what could be done and where I could go and what I could do. You strip that away. That was kind of what I needed.
Adrian Charles, thank you very much.
Not at all.
That was Adrian Charles and Professor Susan Young. Adrian has written about this in his column in The Guardian. Do go to the website, theguardian.com, to have a read. The book he mentioned is called Delivered from Distraction, Getting the Most Out of Life with Attention Deficit Disorder, and it's by Edward Hallowell and John Ratey. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Sam Colbert. Sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back on Monday.